This is SB Nation Radio. Welcome to Bassmaster Radio, the show for fishermen by fishermen. Today's show is brought to you by the Bass Anglers Sportsman Society. Now, here's your host, lifetime BASS member, Tom Abraham.
Welcome to Bassmaster Radio on the SB Nation Radio Network. I am Tom Abraham, your guide for the next hour as we focus on the greatest professional fishermen in the world, the men who make up the Bassmaster Elite Series and those looking to get into that exclusive group through the Bass Pro Shops Open Series, and the up-and-comers on the Carhartt Bassmaster College Series presented by Bass Pro Shops. The best way to communicate with the show, to post your pictures or tell us your stories or just comment on the show, is to visit our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/BassRadio or on Twitter at Bass_Nation and use the hashtag BassRadio. You can also listen to all the shows at Bassmaster.com/radio or just hit the home button and click on Bassmaster Radio. Comeback wins seem to be the flavor of the season this year as John Murray caught nearly 50 pounds of Toledo Bend largemouth Saturday and Sunday to track down Jamie Hartman and the rest of the field for his first Elite Series win, although the West Coast transplant has plenty of winning experience in his career. John, welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing great, Tom. I'm sitting on a beach in Biloxi, Mississippi on spring break with my son. He's digging sand, so life can't get much better.
Well, that's good because you're not too far from the next event. At least you're in Biloxi, Mississippi. And I got to tell you, John, I'm very, very pleased personally to see you win because you and I are about the same age. And a couple of weeks ago, it was all about Jordan Lee, wonderful kid. But, you know, I got tackle in my tackle barn that's older than that kid. And it's good to see one of us, get one done here.
Yeah, when we grew up, experience was everything. Mm-hmm. And you had to have experience to do well in bass tournaments. And now with the internet and all the information out there, man, it's changing quick. Those young guys, they can catch up to us and experience in no time and probably pass us in technology and stuff. So, yeah, it's a battle to stay ahead of those guys or even to compete with those guys. So it's just a treat for me to be able to be up there and actually win one finally after all these years.
And I'm not taking anything away from the young guys, but we used to kind of look up more than down, right? We used to look for birds, and you'd kind of look at things going on the water, and you'd see little clues and hints and so on. And now, with the technology, you spend a lot of time just looking down at that screen. It's like a video game, and it's a totally different thing. Not that a lot of anglers haven't adjusted to that. Certainly, if you're going to win, you got to do that. But it is a different world than it was, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's the thing. Even myself, I'll find myself just doing old school graphing and stuff like that. And the guy goes, you could side image all that in like 5 minutes instead of going back and forth three times. I'm like, yeah, I guess I could have. I'm so stuck in my rut sometimes that some of the great technology I still don't use as much as I should. Obviously, I'm training myself and all that stuff. I don't want to sound like I don't know about any of that stuff. But, yeah, I do get a little distracted with the old school way of lining up on a tree and stuff like that. So, I don't know. Maybe someday all the GPS will go out and then we'll have to fish old school and then we'll be relevant again. I don't know.
Well, I got to be honest with you. We had Rick Klun on a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about that very thing. And in his win on the St. John Rivers last year, he was triangulating because his electronics had gone down. And, he talked about, how important it is to have that skill set because, something could happen out there, and you still need to kind of meld the technology with the good old-fashioned fishing experience. And he was talking about how to triangulate your spot, and, that was long before GPS.
And that was one thing I found. I mean, you could not even sight image these fish that I was catching. They were shallow on a real flat thing that you couldn't see them. So, I mean, you really had to fish to find them, and that's how I think my advantage was on this spot. It's not a spot you can go over and just scan and tell if there's fish there or where they are. You have to actually fish to find those little sweet spots. And, that's the way I still do it. I still fish through those areas to find those spots instead of just totally relying on my electronics to do it.
Toledo Bend Elite Series winner John Murray, our guest. And I understand that the spot or one of your sweet spots was only a couple of hundred yards away from where you won back in 2003 on Toledo Bend. I mean, that's some great experience there.
Yeah, and that's one cool thing. I've sort of taken Toledo Bend, and I've learned one section of the lake really well. there's whole creeks I've never even been in. I don't even know what they look like. Mm-hmm. And I learned that, you know, actually Rick Klun told me that a long time ago. The lake's too big, and there's too many places and too many fish to just run around. So pick an area, learn it, learn all the intricacies, and that's what I've sort of done. I really have one area that down as far as inside, outside, all that kind of thing. And, you know, so I spend my time fishing instead of idling and running through that jungle of Toledo Bend. So I think it's really helped me. I'd like to adopt that philosophy in some of these other lakes. I haven't done it yet, but I might.
What did you think of the overall totals? Because I know that I had on the fantasy fishing, and last week I had predicted close to 100 pounds. I thought it would be up in that range again. It seemed like the fish were post-spawn. There were spawning fish, but there were a lot of fish on the move as well. Your winning total was 77.10, but we saw a lot of fish caught, but we saw a lot of 15, 17-pound bags, you know, not a ton of those 20-pluses that, you know, that you used on Saturday and Sunday to win.
Well, with Bassmaster, you know, being one of the top-rated lakes in the whole country, it gets a lot more pressure mm-hmm. than a lot of other lakes. I mean, there were 500-boat tournaments the week we got there. And just people out fishing, there's just a lot of them. So to really get those big bags, you almost have to go in a time of year the guys aren't out there. You have to go in those Junes and stuff like that a little later in the year when it's hot or something. We were on a perfect week in April. I mean, there were people fishing everywhere. The conditions were, you know, they're just a lot of people. Not that they were in your way, but you just couldn't fish down an area. There was always someone around. So I think that was the biggest thing. Amount of boats, amount of people out there fishing. Time of year, obviously, it's been a long, drawn-out spring, so there wasn't one thing working. They weren't all out or all in. So, yeah, there was a few things working on that. But, you know, that lake has that potential to get that little school like I got. And that's the beauty of it. That's what keeps all of us interested is, you know, you could find that little spot and make that kind of catch.
John Murray with us, winner at Toledo Bend. Talk about jerk baiting, because this is a something that, you know, I live in southern Tennessee, and we've got some really good clear jerk bait waters, but this is always a debate amongst folks that like the jerk bait, is that, you know, 55 degrees, that's it, no more jerk bait, and you can't do it. And you did it over there very successfully once again with an old Lucky Craft 128. But talk about that and your technique on it and whether or not, you know, water temperature would shut you down on a jerkbait bite.
And that's another old school thought. When I first started jerkbaiting back in the 80s, we used it as a spawning bait. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times you'd see these beds, fish on beds, and then you get windy days out west, like on Elephant Butte Lake and Lake Powell. And you could, they wouldn't hit anything, but you could throw a jerkbait across it and work it really fast, and they'd come up and smash it. So my first experience with a jerkbait was actually during spawns and post spawns. It wasn't until a few years later we learned that you could use it in real cold water and work it real slow. Mm-hmm. So it sort of cycled all the way around for me. So this technique felt right at home. April is a prime time when they're not really spawning heavy, but they're not really out. And there's, you know, a lot of activity, a lot of fish swimming around their beds. Jerkbait to me, working fast, I worked it fast. It's a reaction strike that you know, you can't get on any other bait. They won't come up to the top yet for top water. You know, in a week or two, they might smash top water, but right now they wouldn't. So, yeah, it was the perfect time for me when I got on that deal. Man, this is the bait to catch good ones right now.
How much water clarity do you feel like you need to have, and is there a point in time where you just put it away and that's it, it's gone for the year?
Water clarity to me, yeah. I mean, normally I want some danger. I want some wind. I needed wind, but I needed a little bit of danger early morning for the jerkbait. Once it got calm and sunny, even in the sort of dingier water, the jerkbait one is effective. But if you've got a good breeze and you've got that, you know, just shoreline stirred up a little, maybe a mud line, man, that jerkbait was perfect because it just sort of come flashing through that stuff and those fish were sitting there. To me, they're up on the big ones I caught the first couple of days were up on the thing spawning. I think I was actually catching the females off the beds up there with that jerkbait. I couldn't see them, and I couldn't swear to you that's what it was, but that's mm-hmm. in my mind, that's what was happening.
John Murray is our guest. It's the Elite Rewind from Toledo Bend. He won $100,000 there. What a great day on Saturday to get himself in position, and then Sunday as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll learn a little bit more about John Murray. It's not like he just showed up on a tour, but this is his first win. He's been fishing the elites since the beginning. It's his first elite win. I understand he has won about 35 boats in his career, so he's got a fleet of those in the backyard probably. But we'll learn a little bit more about John Murray next. You're listening to Bassmaster Radio on the SB Nation Radio Network.
This is Bassmaster Radio. For tournament results, how-to articles and videos, or to become a member, visit Bassmaster.com. Now back to Tom Abraham.
I am Tom Abraham. Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio on ESPN Nation Radio Network. John Murray is our guest, coming off of his win at Toledo Bend. We were just talking about the jerkbait technique that helped him get in position to win this tournament, and John, on Sunday, though, it was the 5XD, the Strike King 5XD, which, again, a little bit, it feels kind of a little old school right now, but was that a gut reaction type move? What was it that made you decide that that's what you needed to throw?
Well, in the first day of the tournament, I caught two almost 6 pounds on it on the same spot, and I stayed there for another 2 hours and never had another bite. I fished it all day the second day and quite a bit the third day, and I never had a bite on that crankbait again. So I put it away. I mean, I'm like, it's done. It's over. They're moved up on top. And so when I went out on Sunday, I fully planned on just throwing a jerkbait all day. And so when I pulled up on that ridge, it was really windy. It was a lot windier than it had been the day before. The water was dingy. It was still early in the morning, and it was dark. And it just didn't feel right for the jerkbait yet. So I dug down. I got that crankbait, threw it out, caught a 12-incher. And I'm like, wow, I caught one. Obviously not a keeper. I made two more casts and caught a keeper. So then when I got up to my waypoint where my little foundation was, I'm going to try it. So I threw out there and caught that first big one. And yeah, it was 10 minutes later, I caught the second big one. And then that was done. I mean, that was a early morning, low light bite that, it was a gut reaction, but I really did not expect.
John Murray, our guest.
But I did though.
Yeah, John Murray, our guest. All right, let's talk a little bit about John Murray. First of all, I got to tell you, my fishing buddy and I, we had fished a tournament this past weekend, and he uses the Lucas Marine products to wipe his boat down. I kind of bust on him a little bit. The boat's still dripping wet as soon as we pull out of the lake off the ramp, and he breaks out that Lucas Marine products, and they're not a sponsor or anything, but I know they're a sponsor of yours. And it was neat to see that. And what a tremendous product. He sprays that boat down, and in 15 minutes, that thing is pretty as a speckled pup again. I mean, that's a great product.
And that's the beauty for me. You know, I've never been the guy with the cleanest boat until I got with Lucas, and I got the slick mist. Mm-hmm. Now all my buddies, all the guys on tour go, man, I need some slick mist. I need some slick mist. And, yeah, you can spray that on, and now nothing's going to stick, first of all. And then if it keeps you from cleaning it every day if you don't want to. But then it makes it perfect when you do. And that's one thing about all, I've had with Lucas is people come up and tell me these awesome stories about their Lucas products. And it's just great to represent a company that people just love the products. I never hear anything bad. They're like, whatever it is. So that's the kind of stuff you like in this sport. You know, you like to see the companies that support fishing and also make products that the fishermen love.
Mm-hmm. No question. Notice how I worked the speckled pup in there. That's the old Forest Wood Ranger, line, as pretty as a speckled pup. So I know it makes your Ranger shine excellently, that's for sure. About a year and a half ago, you decided to come over permanently from the West Coast. What was behind that decision, and how has that been working out for you?
Well, really, we traveled the country for 4 years in a motorhome, my son, my wife, and I, and he was going to school, and I was living out west still, and I literally, after 30 years of driving across the country back and forth, I couldn't do it anymore. I mean, those 2 and 3 day drives, or days, you're never getting back. So we decided to look for an area. We fished a bass fest there in Dayton, and I went up to Watts Bar Lake in Spring City and found that lake up there is like my own private lake. Everyone goes to Chickamauga fishing. I can go out on Watts Bar and catch them all day long. So I live on a lake. That was my dream. And living in Arizona, you can't live on a lake. So I could live on a lake in Tennessee, and the drives are shorter. My longest drive is like 10 or 11 hours. That's nothing for a West Coast guy. So it was a great move, small town, great people, and I really enjoy living in Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, the Tennessee River system is so phenomenal, and you know, everybody talks about Gunnersville, and Wheeler gets some love, and of course, Kentucky Lake, you know, at opposite ends of that deal. Chickamauga's been so hot, but the dirty little secret really is Nickajack and Watts Bar, right? I mean, we're telling a lot of people right now, but, you know, Nickajack has been on fire as well, the lake between Chickamauga and Gunnersville, and so you're in an area where you can drive, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, and be at all kinds of tremendous water.
So I went over the hill the other day and fished a small tournament over at Center Hill. Awesome lake. Big smallmouth spots, large. I'm like, wow, I'm coming back here. I mean, yeah, I haven't hit Dale Hollow. I mean, there's so many lakes I haven't hit. So, yeah, it's handy for a bass fisherman to go, you know, and have all these opportunities there in that area. And, you know, that's what the Tennessee, I moved to the Tennessee River because I've had tough times on TBA Lake. So I want to learn that. I want to learn the intricacies and just sort of understand it better. But yeah, all those lakes around there are excellent fisheries.
Talk a little bit about your past, because as I said, you've won a lot of boats. I mean, you've won a lot of tournaments in your career. You're a West Coast legend, and it was really neat to see all the guys from the West Coast kind of hang out and watch you weigh in and squeeze for you there. But, you know, when is it that you make the decision to go full-time? Because these kids, I talked about Jordan Lee, these guys now, they go college fishing, they come out, they're pros. You know, they've never bagged a grocery or changed oil on a car. You know, they haven't done any of that kind of stuff. Yeah, because they go right into fishing. Talk about your past and when you transitioned into full-time professional fishing.
Well, you know, Skeet Reese has always told me, you know, I've never had a real job, and I never really did. I started fishing tournaments when I was 13, fished all through college. We didn't have college programs, but I was fishing every week. And so the minute I got 2 years in my college degree, got my second year degree, I went full-time at age 20. And I've never looked back. I was promised my parents, hey, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to go back and get my four-year degree. But so far, I haven't had to pay that back. But, yeah, out west, back when I grew up, you could fish for boats every weekend somewhere. I mean, it was a tremendous time back in the 80s, 90s, just to go fishing. They weren't big money term. No one knew anything about them. But, man, it was a lot of fun. I traveled from New Mexico to Washington, Idaho, all those places. California was a huge hotbed. And I'd have two boats and trucks on the West Coast sometimes and just fly around and fish tournaments every weekend. It was a great lifestyle. You know, I've won 31 bass boats. I've won 7 trucks, you know, all sorts of other things. And it's just a great lifestyle to learn how to tournament fish. And I was just addicted to it. So all these guys, Skeet and Brett Hyatt and Brent Ayler, I saw them all when they were little kids, you know. I mean, it's crazy, you know. So it's been a great experience to see them all come up and become such great professionals. And Aaron Martins, I mean, I remember he was a little tiny kid out there fishing. So, yeah, all that's just a great time. All those guys came up, and it's just all the support has been magnificent.
Toledo Bend champ, John Murray, our guest. All right, finally, a couple of weeks, you'll head up to Ridgeland, Mississippi to fish the Academy Sports and Outdoors Elite Series event at Ross Barnett. What do you know about Ross Barnett? And, you know, what's your thought process going into that deal?
Well, I live 6 hours from there, and I never went down there. I mean, I right now I'm just sort of shaking my head that I was too lazy to go down there. But it was weather. It was my son. It was, you know, my wife still works. So, you know, when I'm gone, it makes it really hard. So, yeah, I'm going down there blind. I'm going to go fishing. And the pressure, the big monkey, the gorilla that's been hanging around my neck for the last 10 years is gone. So I'm going to fish sort of fun. I'm going to just fish my strengths and see what's out there. It's a shallow water lake, obviously a lot of stumps, a lot of lily pads. I've been on a lot of lakes like that. They're not necessarily my strength, but I'm going to go out there and give it the best I got and see what I can find.
Well, enjoy the rest of spring break. We appreciate you taking a few minutes to join us here. Congratulations again on the win. It's great to get, as you say, that monkey off your back, and we wish you the best of luck at Ross Barnett.
Sounds good, Tom. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you. It's John Murray, the winner from Toledo Bend, and he did it in dramatic fashion, coming back with a huge bag on Saturday to get him in position, 23 pounds plus, and then 24 pounds plus to slam the door on Sunday. All right, we'll come back with more right after this. You're listening to Bassmaster Radio on the SB Nation Radio Network.
This is Bassmaster Radio. Watch Bassmaster live at Bassmaster.com and on ESPN3 during every Elite Series event. Now back to Tom Abraham.
Welcome back, Bassmaster Radio on the SB Nation Radio Network. I want to thank Toledo Bend champion John Murray for being with us. And injuries are a part of fishing, just like they are in any professional sport or even a recreational sport. You've got to take care of yourself from a preventative standpoint. And also, if there is an injury, you might need to see an orthopedic surgeon. And one of the top orthopedic surgeons group in all of the Southeast, of course, is TOC, the Orthopedic Center in Huntsville, Alabama. They have done surgeries on a number of top pros, and we heard a lot about some of the surgeries that guys have had to have over the years. And joining us now, a guy that has performed some of those himself, Dr. John Greco. Doc, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Big Dog. How are you, buddy?
I am fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about this, because I don't think people would think that fishing would be related to injuries. But what are some of the more common injuries that you've seen among professional fishermen?
Well, I mean, just because of the repetitive nature, you see a lot of shoulder and elbow injuries and difficulties. Also, you see a lot of back problems and knee problems. Those are probably the top four and probably encompass about 95% of what you're going to see. I guess every now and then a finger issue, but I probably would say that the shoulder and elbow issues are the most common.
You know, and we've had some kind of scary injuries as well in recent years. We all know about Mike Iaconelli a couple of years ago after a tournament on Gunnersville, and he had some sort of problems in his leg, and, I don't know if there was some clotting involved and things like that, but, sometimes these guys, they fight their way through a tournament, and then they end up in a situation that could be pretty dicey.
Oh, yeah. One of my partners took care of Mike, and that was a scary scenario. Sometimes you get the bizarre event, like a traumatic injury. Many times it's guys like you and me. I mean, as we get older, we become less flexible, and so it's easier to strain something. And then again, just the repetitive nature. If anybody's watched KVD throw, it's a rapid fire process, and anything that you do that rapidly and that frequently, it can trigger an elbow or shoulder issue.
And a lot of these guys take a pounding. I mean, they don't get to choose the day that they're going to fish. They're going to be out there, and there's going to be rough weather, rough water. They hit some of the largest lakes in all the United States, and they'll take a pounding on these boats. Now, I know yourself, you're a fisherman as well, and certainly boat technology has gotten a lot better. But I would think lower back injuries would be something also that you might see a decent amount of.
No doubt. You're trying to balance. Like if you're on rough water, you're trying to balance everything, and that's taking its toll, especially if your core strength is not where it needs to be. So that's one of the things that for anybody with back issues, we always tell them that, preventative measures start with a solid core, solid hip strength. But anybody that's pulling a trolling motor up and down, depending on who makes the motor, some are heavier than others. Mm-hmm. That's a tussle and a struggle on the back. If you're landing a fish, you're doing everything rapidly. I mean, you're excited and not necessarily going to go ahead and manage your catch with proper technique. You want to get the fish in the boat. So those are common causes of back issues.
We've seen guys excel in this sport deep into their 50s, 60s, 69-year-old Rick Klun winning a tournament last year. So we know that guys can compete at a high level. And, of course, recreational fishermen, I hope I die on the water. I mean, that's where I want to be. I want to be making my last cast and my last breath at the same time. So we know that you can go the distance on that. But what would be some of the things that you would recommend for fishermen, professional or otherwise, in terms of being able to stay in condition to be able to fish and enjoy the sport for their entire lives?
Well, Shaw Griggs, he's a good friend. I've known him a long time. And Shaw just keeps on plugging along. And I think the key thing in someone like Shaw is obviously maintaining, good, not eating too much. I mean, it's harder when you're bigger. Kind of being diligent and maintaining, a good diet, but also flexibility. I mean, that's, as we get older, we get stiff, myself included. And so I think good preventative measures of flexibility, but also muscle balance, anything front and back. If you balance yourself through some exercises in the front of your chest, you got to do the same thing on the back. It's the same thing with the knee. If you're going to work on your quad, you got to work on your hamstring. And so I think the best thing from a preventative measure standpoint would be improving flexibility, but also good muscle tone.
Dr. John Greco with us from the TOC, orthopedic surgeon, talking about some of the things that you can do to stay in great shape and be able to continue to enjoy your fishing. The guys that have been worked on, I think, are more than what people know. I mean, we all know about Gerald Swindle, our angler of the year, our reigning angler of the year, and the problems that he had with a knee in the off season and that he got taken care of, and several others. When a guy gets a repair, whether it's a knee or a shoulder, I've seen some guys wearing braces on their wrists lately. Is there a pretty good chance that they can have a full recovery and continue, or is there something they need to do after you've had a surgery to make sure you don't have that same injury?
Well, I think forever you always have to kind of maintain good tone. I operated on one of the anglers and a few days before his wedding, I didn't know he was going to get married.
Yeah.
And it turned out we had to prepare his rotator cuff. So he went through that process with a sling, but shortly thereafter he won a tournament. So I was very pleased in that regard. And so that, you know, they can bounce back and become completely completely competitive and successful as they were before they had their injury. But I think after any injury, when I tell my young athletes or older athletes, so I think you have to always maintain a certain amount of good tone. So if you've had your shoulder operated on, I think it's important that forever, you know, down the line, and you're working out, you do good maintenance shoulder exercises just to keep your strength. But again, it's got to be balanced, and you have to have good flexibility.
Yeah, Dr. John Greco with us. One of the things that I know that is always very interesting to me, now there are many guys that are in great shape. Aaron Martins is a fitness freak. Ott Defoe seems to take care of himself very well as well. But a lot of these guys, from a footwear standpoint, don't really, you know, I mean, they're wearing flip-flops. In some cases, Ott Defoe fishes barefoot. It surprises me. Just talk about what you might want to do for your base if you're out there and whether or not it makes sense to do something like that. Even now, some of these, I call them flip-flops, some of these, you know, some of this footwear, this outdoor footwear is well-built and it's got a good base to it. But just talk about, you know, how you take care of your feet and your base out there as well.
Well, you know, it's funny you said that. I'm treating right now a good friend who's a local fisherman, very successful football coach and fisherman in the Gunnersville area, and he's got a terrible plantar fasciitis. And so it's one of those things where I think that, again, as we get older, you know, you lose flexibility, and that's how people develop tennis elbow. That's how they develop rotator cuff issues. That's how they develop plantar fasciitis. So you're standing all, you know, for hours on end, and I think that you know, of course, everybody's different, but I think that you have to figure if you're going to, you know, if you need to be in athletic running shoes with a good arch support, and that works for you, that's the way to go. If you want to wear Chacos, which has a good support system, I mean, that's good. I mean, it's kind of like a more developed a sandal. But I think everybody's different. But, you know, so many of us have flat feet that it'll catch up with you if you're not careful. And improper footwear can sometimes trigger something like plantar fasciitis.
And finally, I know that this isn't a orthopedic situation, but we've seen advances recently in terms of gaiters that guys wear now, you know, over their heads and around their necks and so on, and in their hands. And you and I are both of Italian descent, so we think that we don't need any protection from the sun. We have dark skin. We got that olive oil skin. But just talk about that aspect as well, because it seems like there's a great awareness now on taking care of your skin.
Well, I remember fishing with Mark Menendez, and Mark would use kind of specially formulated sunblock because he was very susceptible. He's kind of lighter skin. I do a lot of fly fishing, and in the fly fishing world, protection, if you look at a guide, I mean, they are covered up, you know, with buffs and hats and everything else.
Right.
So long sleeve shirts, but that, you know, have good airflow. So I think that you're starting to see people realize it's an important deal. The more exposure you get, I mean, I don't get on the water nearly as much as I'd like to, but somebody who's on the water for, you know, 200 days a year, awful lot of sun exposure. And I think if they don't take care of that seriously, then there's, you know, serious risk of skin cancer. And those skin cancers can be traumatic and potentially deadly, especially if it's a melanoma. So I think you're starting to see people really heed to the warnings that you know, sun exposure can be very dangerous.
Dr. John Greco has been our guest from the TOC. Doc, good fishing, and I appreciate you joining us for a few minutes.
Big Dog, take care. Have a great weekend.
All right, thank you. All right, we're going to break in. We'll come back. Final segment is next right here. Bassmaster Radio on ESPN Nation Radio Network.
This is Bassmaster Radio. The fish are in the live well, and we're heading for the dock. Now, back to Tom Abraham.
Welcome back. Final segment of Bassmaster Radio today on ESPN Nation Radio Network. I want to thank John Murray and, of course, Mike Iaconelli for being our guests. And joining me now to wrap things up, as always, my good friend Scott Morris. Scott, welcome in. How are you, man?
Tom, I'm great. Love this weather and ready to rock, man.
Have you recovered yet from that back of the boat beatdown I put on you Sunday morning? Or are you all right or what? You didn't sell the boat or anything, did you? I hope you didn't sell the boat.
If anybody's going to put a beat down on me, I'd rather it be you because, you know, you deserve it from all the times I put a beat down on you. It's always good to find that acorn every once in a while, so that's good.
You know, we were talking to John Murray earlier. One of his primary sponsors is Lucas Marine Products, and I told him about how much you love that product. I feel like we're doing an unsolicited plug for it. But, yeah, you're a big believer for the maintenance of the boat, of wiping the boat down almost immediately as soon as you get out of the water, the engine, everything, that scum line, and that product is fantastic for doing that. And if you want to maintain the value in your boat, I mean, you know, it's just one of the things that you got to do. And it's a lot easier to do right off the bat than it is a couple hours later after that stuff's all baked on.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. I should have stock in that company. But we have no association with those guys at all. And just from a pure, honest point, you put that stuff on your boat, it really does a good job protecting your boat and maintaining your boat and maintaining the shine. Also on your motor, on your Mercury motor, man, it does a fantastic job of maintaining all that shine. And the key is, you know, once you pull that boat out, is to immediately wipe it down. And if you do that consistently over a period of time, you'll have great success.
Well, neither of our teams did very well at Toledo Bend in the fantasy fishing. I did have three guys that made the cut, and Greg Hackney, Kevin Van Dam, who ended up finishing 29th. He slipped a little bit from day two. And Mike Iaconelli, who was 16th after day two and got to 21st. So they made the first cut. Didn't get anybody to day four, which is what you really have to do. By the way, the perfect team, if you will, would have been the team of Jason Christie from Bucket A, Jamie Hartman from Bucket B, who almost won this thing, John Murray, of course, from Bucket C, Brandon Polinick, and Drew Benton. And, you know, this thing finished about 20 pounds lower than KVD last year in May. I think they missed the spawn a little bit, and they were in that post-spawn transition period, which maybe hurt the overall weight. I thought it'd be a 100-pound tournament, but those fish were in between being where they were on spawn and where they were last year in May when KVD had 97 pounds.
Oh, absolutely. And my part of my fantasy group was to kind of pick a couple of people that were good post spawners and a couple of people that were good sight fishermen. And this has been just an all around good fisherman. Here's what I learned about this tournament, Tom. If from a fantasy fishing standpoint, Hartman is on the map. And I'm going to tell you better pick Hartman consistently now. You talking about somebody on a roll, Tom? Hartman is on a roll.
Well, what's interesting about it is, I mean, this is a guy from Hampton, New York, and is a guy that loves to have a spinning rod in his hand. He's a smallmouth fisherman. It'll be very interesting when the tour swings New York in July when it goes up to the Thousand Islands into Lake Champlain. But he has shown that, you know, he was very, very strong, of course, on Cherokee, which you fish very much like a northern lake. But he was, he's been strong all along, and he showed a lot at Toledo Bend.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're exactly right, and you said it perfectly. Two different lakes, I mean, completely different lakes, completely different techniques, and this guy's at the top of the chain. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about versatile fishermen, you better put Hartman on your teams.
Yeah, you know, the guy that surprised me, to be honest with you, was Chris Lane, now from Gunnersville, and I had Chris on my fantasy team, and he just could not catch fish. Now, he last year, again in May, in the shallow water with the whopper plopper, kind of introduced everybody to the whopper plopper in a big way and just tore him up. He gave Bassmaster Live some of the best footage that we had seen to date. But, man, just 3 pounds, 6 ounces on day one, 5 pounds, 9 ounces on day two, and just could not seem to get the fish and find the fish. And I also had Cliff Crochet, because I thought that Crazy Cajun would do great, you know, down there, and he struggled as well.
Yeah, and I would say my biggest surprise would be Gerald Swindle.
Yeah.
You know, he, you know, with that year he had this year or last year and the year that he's had now, I think Gerald's going to put it all together. But I was kind of surprised because he has a good history on Toledo Bend also.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We need to talk to him in the next few weeks. It'll be interesting to see what kind of a year he has. You know, it is difficult to come back the next year after a Angler of the Year title. The same thing sometimes with guys that win a Bassmaster Classic. It makes it very difficult because there's just so many demands on their time. And it was interesting. It was one of the things talking to Mike Iaconelli a few minutes ago. Ike talked about, you know, he's very active in outside of tournament fishing, but he has to shut everything down when it's tournament week. All of the thoughts about the different shows that he's producing and everything else, he says his wife does a great job kind of keeping on top of the business end of things, and he has to put the blinders on and go fish.
Yeah, and that psychology, that sports psychology, I mean, golf is a great example. You know, Iaconelli has got that in place now. But you're right, that could be something that Gerald's struggling with. I mean, I don't know. I can say this, though, I would be very happy to be Angler of the Year and have that time demand on me than a struggling fisherman.
Yeah, certainly. That would be a good problem to have. All right, Scott, always a pleasure, man. Next week we'll put together our teams for Ross Barnett. Scott Morris has been our guest. Thanks, Scott.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
That's going to do it for this week's episode of Bassmaster Radio. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Until next time, make sure you keep those lines tight and those nets heavy. I'm Tom Abraham. This has been Bassmaster Radio on the SB Nation Radio Network.